or wordlessly, what his problem was, bolstered by the few mouthfuls of alcohol she had indulged in. He ran his tongue across his lips, his nostrils flaring. She knew him well enough to know that he was scenting her, but she didn't know him well enough to guess why.
"Do you know the biggest tradition of the Alpha Valentine's party?"
he asked her, his voice coated in gravel. Isabel had to think about it for a moment, wondering if it was some sort of trick question. "The love lottery?"
"Love letters."
Ashford drawled the words with a touch of ire, mimicking Ed Jones's commentary.
"Are delivered to the alphas in residence. A favorite is chosen, and the winners get to choose one of the alphas for a kiss."
Isabel already knew the tradition. She had no idea why it was being explained to her. "Okay?" she asked. Theodore's usual smile flashed across his face.
"So, have you thought about what you're going to write?"
he asked. She blanched, and she was pretty sure she heard Killian and Ashford laughing at her.
"No," she bit out. "I'm not participating."
"You're here."
Theodore spread his hands.
"You have to participate."
"Isabel?"
A familiar voice called out, causing her to twist in Killian's lap, searching over her shoulder.
"Eve!"
She smiled, hopping off Killian and setting her cup down as she hurried away from the boys and into the arms of a much safer and less moody friend. Eve laughed at her enthusiastic hug.
"You're shaking. Are you sick again?"
Isabel shrugged.
"Only a little. I'm so happy you're here."
"You are?"
Eve bit back her smile, ushering Isabel away from the group of girls she had arrived with.
"What were you doing on Gray's lap? Isn't he gay?"
"That's exactly why." Isabel rolled her eyes. Theo and the others managed to snap up emergency girlfriends to knock back any rumors from the episode tonight. I was kind of left out a little. Killian was just being nice.
"He can be nice to me any day."
Eve sighed wistfully, looking over at the circle of chairs.
"Don't drink the punch,"
Isabel advised, tugging her arm to get her moving in a different direction.
"It's horrible and very alcoholic."
"Ah,"
Eve chuckled.
"That explains the enthusiastic hug."
"I could be a hugger," Isabel pushed out her lower lip.
"Sure you could,"
Eve indulged her.
"An adorable, prickly hugger."
"Oh, the love lottery! We have to enter."
She suddenly dragged Isabel over to the lottery table, which was already drawing the crowd of Omegas that had arrived at the party.
"No, thanks."
Isabel tried to disentangle herself, but Eve held firm, shooting her a chastising look.
"Don't forget the plan, Carter. We need to get your popularity points up, and whoever wins this lottery is a guaranteed headline next week."
Isabel chanced a look toward the chair circle, noticing that Theodore was basically hanging off his chair to watch her get dragged to the table. He was laughing, too. He winked at her, giving her a quick thumbs up. Theodore could be a bit of a dick, but he got away with it because his smile was so amazing and his eyes crinkled just mischievously enough to give him a free pass. It was a little bit infuriating.
"Here."
Eve shoved a slip of paper and pen into Isabel's hand. She stared down at it, completely at a loss. She wasn't in love, so how could she write a love letter? With a quiet groan, she put the pen to paper and scrawled out something lame.
"Roses are red, violets are blue. Try to kiss me and I will actually kill you."
Folding the paper, she tossed it into the big glass bowl, peeking over Eve's shoulder to catch her already on her second paragraph. Something about luscious lips and eyes like dawn sunshine. Killian, then. It was hard to guess who would get the most love letters between Killian, Theodore, Nico, and Ashford. While Theodore seemed to have an impressive fan base, if the Ironside website was anything to go by, Killian, Ashford, and Nico were all commonly dragged into the online debates about who was the hottest alpha at Ironside. Killian's striking, pale perfection had most people comparing him to all sorts of mythical creatures, like angels and vampires. Ashford's dusky gold coloring, messy, tarnished locks, and confident smirk was to blame for the comment section of Ironside clips being spammed by thirsty emojis. Nico seemed more like a comfort food for the fans, someone they could rely on to always be showing cocky smirks and flashes of skin at all the right moments to keep viewers engaged. And they loved his laugh. Nico had the most engaging laugh she had ever encountered, even if she had only encountered it on screen. It always started off as a low, throaty rumble before exploding into a sound so infectious it was impossible not to smile. The deep, velvety timbre resonated in a warm, tingling sound that could influence the tone of the show like the flick of a button. She paused, glancing back to the bowl, realizing she completely forgot to put a name on her slip of paper. Both a name for who it was to and also who it was from. She shrugged, stepping back to wait for Eve. Except Eve didn't seem to be finishing up anytime soon. With a small sigh, she moved back to the ring of chairs, perching on the arm of Killian's chair when he smiled at her.
"That was quick," he noted.
"I suppose we shouldn't expect long, flowery lines of poetry."
"It was poetic as fuck."
Isabel glanced longingly at the cup she had set into the ground, wishing she could just let loose like the other students.
"Bold Sigma,"
Ashford chuckled, sounding delighted.
"I knew you were hiding a filthy mouth and a backbone in there somewhere."
"Deep down," Isabel shot back, looking at him over her shoulder. "Very deep." For some reason, his eyes darkened, and he moved an inch forward in his seat.
"Weren't we supposed to be serving food?"
Theodore suddenly asked, standing up from his chair.
"Who was in charge of that?"
"Moses,"
Reed said, his smile sharp.
"Did none of you idiots think it was strange he volunteered to do everything? I don't even want to see what he deemed worthy for us to eat."
Theodore groaned, shaking his head.
"I'll go check."
"I'll help,"
Wallace jumped up, attaching herself to his side.
"I'll go help too."
Killian stood up, stroking her arm. It was just enough of an invitation for her to escape the others and follow the gentle Alpha back into the dorm. When Eve glanced up from her letter, Isabel caught her eye, miming that she was following Killian inside. Eve flashed her a thumbs up and went back to scribbling, her tongue in her cheek.
"Who's your friend writing to?"
Killian asked.
"She's covered both sides of the paper."
Isabel laughed.
"You? Me?"
He touched his chest, turning backwards to face her as he pushed the door open with his shoulder.
"How touching. And unsurprising."
Isabel shook her head at his complete lack of modesty. Killian led the way to the very end of the corridor, taking the stairs to the second level. They had barely reached the top step before Wallace was tearing back past them, her face as white as a sheet as she ran away. They stepped into an undercover kitchen area facing the rest of the rooftop, which was laid out like a luxury desert oasis. Leather bucket seats were scattered around a wide, tiled fire pit, and there were other little areas that Isabel caught sight of out of the corner of her eye, but she was too focused on the alphas standing in the kitchen area to fully take in the rest of the space. Sato was in the middle of the aisle between the island and the bench, his arms folded, the dark void of his eyes drilling into the back of Wallace's head until even her footsteps had faded away. And then Those eyes switched to Isabel. Moses looked to him, waiting for something, before that dark expression fell over his face again, and he turned the full, thundering force of it on Isabel.
"This area is off-limits," Moses snapped.
"Oh, stop it."
Theodore shoved his arm.
"Where's the food?"
"You're looking at it."
Moses bared his teeth, but all the ire dropped out of his tone when he addressed his brother. There was even a hint of a smile at the corners of his mouth. Sato hadn't even moved an inch, his eyes still fixed on her, like his gaze alone could somehow swallow her whole. It occurred to her that maybe he was waiting for her to thank him, but it wasn't like they were ever alone together, and she didn't want to bring up the uncomfortable topic of her breakdown in front of everyone else, especially Moses. Theodore moved away from the kitchen island, giving Isabel an unobstructed view of the trays lined up. There were 10 of them in total, all of them piled with burnt to a crisp somethings.
"Everyone's down there getting wasted," Theodore complained. "We need to feed them, or Mickey and Kaylin are going to fucking flay us."
Isabel swallowed, her tongue feeling weirdly thick. She blinked as a wave of dizziness came out of nowhere. She shifted to lean against the stairwell wall. Sato's eyes crept after her, narrowing slightly. He sniffed the night air. She pulled her shoulders back, pretending that nothing was wrong. But the longer Theodore and Moses argued, the worse the dizzy spells got. This wasn't the kind of sickness she was used to. This was something else.
"I'll be downstairs," she mumbled,
quickly turning and catching herself against the stair railing before she could fall. She ducked into Killian's room, thinking she could just grab her bag and rush back to dorm O, where she could sleep off whatever this weird feeling was. But as soon as she spilled outside, she pitched to the side, the world around her spinning violently.
"Let's try this again, shall we?"
The voice in her ear was familiar, the hand around her waist pinching. Someone had been waiting for her just outside the dorm. She smelled something off, something sour and chemical, but she couldn't place it. Whoever dragged her was big, towering, so strong. Her back hit the wall, the sounds of the party a little too far away. She groaned, fighting against the fog pulling her under. Her limbs weren't working. The strong person was holding her up.
"I knew you'd give in eventually," he whispered,
his hand creeping between her legs, before it jerked away. She pitched to the side, suddenly without the support holding her up, and slammed into the ground.
"We'll see what gives in first,"
a second voice taunted.
"Your ribcage or your fucking spleen."
And then there was thumping, groaning, the cracking of something hitting the wall beside where she had fallen.
"Pick."
Someone's alpha voice pierced right through her haze, vibrating against her bones.
"Ribs,"
was the pained reply, torn from a throat by the alpha command. It was followed by another heavy thump and the sound of a body cracking violently against the wall, a voice hitched with pain. It seemed like an eternity before her body was moving again, shifting with sickening speed, becoming weightless as some sort of cloth dropped over her head. It smelled like leather, but there was another scent there, clinging and cloying. Nectar, sweet and smoky. The mildest poison. She was sure it was familiar to her somehow. She heard a door opening and closing, and then a new voice.
"What the fuck, Oscar? Just reverse it," the rough voice demanded. "Take her body back an hour or something." What happened?
She was passed from one set of hands to another. The softness of a rug cushioned her back as she was laid carefully down.
Oscar!
The voice prompted harshly. The door closed again, and a whole litany of swear words followed it, all of them growled out ferociously. The leather item slipped off her face, and rough hands cupped her temples, a trickle of energy working beneath her skin, skipping along her veins like electricity. She could feel breath against her face, and then the warmth of the body close to hers. Her vision began to clear, but the leather suddenly dropped back over her head.
Don't move,
the voice demanded. It was smooth and deep, velvety and rounded. It made her shiver, her twitching fingers falling back to the soft rug.
Good girl,
he whispered, his touch falling away. She heard the sound of the door again and quickly sat up, a leather jacket falling from her face to her lap. She was in an office. It dripped in precise opulence, without a single personal touch in view. There was nobody else in there with her. Her vision was clear, her body back to normal, but she was very confused.
Take her body back an hour or something.
She stared down at her hands, clenching in the leather jacket. The leather jacket Sado had been wearing earlier. The memories tried to swim back, but they were prevented by some sort of weird block. Like, none of it had really happened, and she was trying to recall a fading dream. She stood on shaky legs, stepping toward the door, her breaths choppy as she moved out into the empty hall. She looked at the door, a flash of memory threatening at the edges of her mind, and then she glanced the other way, toward the stairwell. Her decision made, she started that way, her mouth set into a firm line, but she barely made it one step up before the door to her right suddenly opened. Sado stood there, his hand outstretched.
My jacket,
he prompted her. She held it out, but he made no move to grab it. So she pushed it into his hand. His fingers brushed hers as he pulled it back, twisting his body and tossing it back into his room.
And now you,
he demanded, holding his hand out again. She swallowed past her refusal, but she didn't take his hand. His lips crooked, not really a smile, and the darkness in his eyes seemed to grow deeper. His emotion felt different to other people's. It wasn't a singular feeling, more like maelstrom, a tornado of possibilities, just out of her reach. He reached forward, grabbing a handful of the flared skirt of her dress, and then he dragged her into his room. He closed the door, pushing her lightly until her back hit the cherry oak, though he didn't press up against her or invade her personal space too much. Not with his body, anyway. Those dark pools of his eyes were a different story. They tunneled right into her.
We have a little problem,
he whispered silkily.
We do,
she agreed, her voice trembling. I feel like my memory was just tampered with.
It wasn't.
His room was unlit, but the flash of his teeth was clear.
Your body was taken back in time to before it was drugged.
Drugged? Her forehead crinkled.
The big fucker.
Sado loomed just a little closer.
The second-year beta with the oily hair.
Crow. Isabel breathed. Horror in her tone. She frowned, a hint of the incident coming back to her. No, Bellamy had given her the drink. Sado made a soft, dangerous humming sound.
He's lucky I didn't kill him. Back to the problem, Sigma.
Isabel, she corrected.
Little rabbit,
he countered.
Always slipping beneath the fence line into where she isn't welcome. Always getting caught in snares.
Isabel felt for the door handle. Tell me what the problem is.
The problem is your mouth.
His eyes dipped, fixing to her lips.
You need to keep it shut about what just happened.
Or? She wasn't actually planning on telling anyone. She just wanted to know exactly what she was up against.
Or next time I rescue you.
His body brushed hers, his head ducking, his lips against her ear, sending shivers racing down her spine.
It'll be so I can go in for the kill myself.
Noted, she breathed, turning the handle and spilling into the hallway, where she collided with Killian.
There you are.
He gripped her arms, throwing a concerned glance at the door that had slammed behind her.
What happened?
Sato dropped his jacket. I was returning it.
Oh.
He did a quick assessment of her face, but didn't seem to like what he found there, the concern deepening.
We should go out. They're about to draw the love lottery.
They started for the door, but Killian stopped her before they made it outside again.
If Sato does something...
He didn't seem to know how to finish the sentence.
Like what?
She asked, keeping her expression calm.
Sato hadn't exactly been subtle in his threats, so she wasn't willing to find out if keeping her mouth shut included whatever she might say to the other alphas.
Never mind.
He forced a smile, shoving open the door.
But next time you find something of his, just leave it.
Chapter 10. The Goodness of Sato's Heart.
Isabel!
Eve broke away from her group as soon as she spotted them, and Isabel branched off from Killian, who seemed to be looking for the others.
What happened?
Nothing. Isabel quickly brushed off the question.
Well, the alphas are going to race across the lake,
Eve told her breathlessly, dragging her back to the crowd huddling around the lake.
Why?
Isabel asked, her concern spiking. None of them could swim.
To decide who will draw the lottery,
Eve shouted over her shoulder, the bodies jostling them as they tried to push forward. When they broke out in front, Isabel saw that Theodore, Reed, Spade, Ashford, and Nico were standing at the other side of the lake, already half naked. Killian jogged up to join them, pulling his shirt over his head. This time next week, the Ironside fans were going to have an aneurysm. She had seen Theodore's muscles up close, but nothing could have prepared her for the sight before her. They were each so different, but they were all strong and fit. They could have filled out 6 pages in a textbook of the different variations of a perfect alpha specimen. Theodore and Ashford had a little more bulk, but Spade's and Reed's torsos looked like they had been chiseled out of marble. Their endless hours in the practice rooms were clearly paying off. She didn't know what Killian did to keep fit, but his was a more lithe, graceful strength, his muscles jumping and twitching as he bounced around, warming up. Nico looked the strongest, his arms, chest, and thighs thicker than the others. It was both surprising and not, because Nico was on his way to specializing in tennis, and he spent a good deal of time outside in the sun, practicing different types of sport. But Nico didn't really have the persona of an athlete, and his face was so beautiful, his features so sharp and delicate. She sometimes couldn't merge the two sides of his personality that the Ironside show aired. Ashford stepped forward, gripping one of the, now many, ropes that climbed across the lake, testing it.
He looked like the old gods in the gifted books, the ones their ancestors had believed in, with golden skin, eyes like sapphires, and dark blonde hair that he had managed to twist into a knot, thick clumps of it falling free to frame his face.
"In three!"
he yelled as the others stepped forward to grab a rope.
"Two!"
He scanned the faces, licking his lips.
"One!"
They raced into the lake in a tangle of limbs and splashes, laughing as they tried to shove each other, utterly uncaring of what would happen if one of them released their rope. Isabel couldn't help but chuckle as Reed used the rope to hoist himself up, wrapping his strong thighs around Theodore's torso and tearing him away from his rope. Theodore grabbed Reed's rope instead, and then switched back to his own, shoving roughly at the other boy. Killian was fast, Ashford was sly, and Spade was methodical. But they all had one thing in common. They wanted to stop Theodore from winning. They did everything in their power, but he only laughed at their efforts, dodging and wrestling, and at one point grabbing as many as three of their ropes to keep himself secured. It seemed that any one of them could have won, but Killian mysteriously lost his speed a few feet from the edge of the lake. Reed subtly pulled back, and Nico slipped, taking Spade down with him. Luckily, they landed in shallow water and stood back up, laughing and shaking off droplets as Theodore reached the bank first, turning and shoving Ashford, who was coming up behind him, back into the water for fun.
"The winner!"
Ashford bellowed, emerging from the water like some kind of god of the seas, shaking out his hair and grabbing Theodore's arm, punching it into the sky. Everyone cheered, but Isabel only stood there, her brows pinching in. Everything they did seemed so deliberate, like they weren't just playing the Ironside game. They were playing a different game, with different stakes, against everyone else there. Except they were the only ones who knew about it, which meant the rest of them were destined to lose. When Theodore looked her way, she quickly pasted on a smile, and he walked up to the bowl, sticking his wet hand inside and shuffling it around. He seemed to grip one of the papers, but Ashford shook his head, leaning up against the lottery table.
"Nah," he said casually, "not that one."
Everyone laughed, cheering at his playful nature, and Theodore released the paper, catching another one. Ashford shook his head, and this continued a few more times until Ashford and Theodore locked eyes. A message seemed to pass between them, Ashford cocking a brow, almost like a challenge, and then Theodore drew out the paper.
"Roses are red, violets are blue. Try to kiss me, and I will actually kill you."
He lifted the paper, and she knew he was scenting it, even though it might not have been apparent to the rest of the crowd.
"Isabel Carter."
Eve, who had taken her hand in a death grip at some point, released her in shock and then shoved her a little too hard in the direction of Theodore. There was a chorus of sound all around her, like something particularly dramatic was happening. The timing was not great. The Ironside show had insinuated that she was trying to cozy up to several of the alphas only a matter of hours ago, and now she was in a position where she would have to choose between them. She could choose Theodore, her friend, or Killian, who wouldn't make it weird, but that would be unfair on him. And uncomfortable. But it was her first kiss.
"Well?"
Ashford goaded, aquamarine eyes glinting.
"Pick an alpha, Sigma."
The longer she took, the quieter it got. Some people had their phones out. Students were allowed to post photos prior to Ironside episodes airing, to try and get popularity points or grow their social presence, but videos were only allowed if they depicted personal projects. They were waiting, hoping to catch a photo. She grimaced, glancing up to the roof where two more alphas looked down at her, surveying the scene with cold looks on their faces. "Moses," she said, a small smile on her lips. It was the one alpha she was sure would refuse. "I pick Moses."
"Moses isn't here,"
Ashford drawled.
"Yes, he is."
She pointed up to the rooftop.
"Moses,"
Reed snapped. Both alphas disappeared from above, and Isabel grinned, feeling like she had won some sort of personal victory. Until she heard Eve hissing against the back of her neck.
"What are you doing?" she asked. "He isn't going to come out."
"I know," Isabel complained quietly. "But this is too far." Eve groaned out a frustrated sound.
"Can you just pick someone else?"
Isabel shook her head, trying to avoid the looks of the other alphas as everyone around them shuffled nervously. The rest of the academy didn't know much about Moses, since he kept out of the spotlight and didn't attend any social events, but it was clear that Theodore's twin had aligned himself with Sato.
"It's getting late,"
Isabel said loudly, checking her phone.
"Guess I should be heading off."
A few people snickered.
"Cool party,"
she said by way of goodbye.
"Not so fast,"
Ashford laughed a second before Moses walked out of the dorm.
Well, that backfired.
Moses could have just stayed inside. He could have put his headphones in and ignored the desperate people outside calling his name, hoping for a photo opportunity. But the Sigma thought she could use him in her little game with the other alphas, and he was just annoyed enough to call her bluff. Let them all see her tuck tail and run, because he sure as fuck wasn't going to. She stood there, with squared shoulders and a clenched jaw, and for the briefest moment, he allowed himself to feel just a little bit of pity for her. Her night had been a rough one. She didn't let it show, but the beast inside him always recognized turmoil. Her pretty blue dress was a little too wrinkled. Her blonde hair was tangled, strands of strawberry catching on strands of gold, darker wisps tickling her face. Her hair had been in a ponytail earlier in the night. She also carried scents that weren't her own. Bergamot and bark and burning oleander. Killian's complex, pleasurable scent coiled around the smoking poison of Oscar. There were others, too, but Oscar and Killian had drenched her. Oscar, who had disappeared for a short amount of time earlier, returning with a scowl instead of his jacket. Oscar, who conveniently disappeared whenever Kaelin appeared on the rooftop, that familiar prowl in his step when he was hunting someone down. That only increased Moses' anger. Now, even Oscar was getting involved with the Sigma, even though the most likely explanation was that he had pulled her aside to threaten her. It might explain the harrowed, crushed cherry scent of her skin as he drew close. "You can still run away," he told her quietly, close enough that only the people immediately surrounding them would hear.
"So can you,"
she shot back, eliciting a round of gasps and laughter. Theodore was spoiling her, making it seem like alphas weren't dangerous, when they most definitely were. A growl built up in the back of his throat, and he felt two of his friends drifting closer, alarmed by the sound. Elijah and Gabriel, always the first two to clue on. If he went feral, the Sigma was dead. And not just her. anyone around them too weak to defend themselves against him. Which was all of them. There were too many witnesses, and it would create too big of a mess for the others to cover up. He would be executed, and everything they were working toward would be lost. But she was just an annoying little Sigma. She couldn't make him break. He cupped her cheek, and her breath stopped, her skin flushing, those pale, gold, black-ringed irises disappearing from view as she lowered her eyes. She was staring at his chest, her beautiful lips pressed tightly together. He didn't like that he thought her lips were beautiful, but there was nothing to be done about that. There was another scent on her, chemical and sour, unfamiliar to him. He used that to guide his thoughts away from wondering if he might actually want to kiss her or not. He had never kissed anyone before, and the rest of the Alphas knew it.
"The last person who tried to kiss me got a handful of dirt in his eyes," she warned him quietly, the words barely making any sound as they formed on her lips. But he was already staring at her lips, so he heard her.
"You picked me," he reminded her.
"You weren't supposed to come out."
"Why did you put your name in the draw?"
"I didn't," she bit back. "I just wrote something stupid and didn't put my name on it."
He blinked, drawing back a little. "Those assholes." He glared at Kian, who had a towel wrapped around his golden shoulders, his sapphire eyes filled with equal amounts of humor and trepidation. He had known which letter was hers and had challenged Theodore to pick it. Theodore wanted to prove that Carter wasn't a threat, so he had. And now Moses was being punished. He sighed, his eyes drifting back to her. She was staring him full in the face, a tinge of confusion in the way she was examining him. He felt something brush against his mind, and the smallest sliver of his annoyance melted away. She was trying to figure him out, trying to read him, trying to taste his emotion. He couldn't have that. He ducked down, fusing his lips to hers. A burst of sensation followed, almost too quick for him to absorb it. But it was like being kicked viciously in the stomach, an immediate, violent reaction that he hadn't been expecting. So this was what it was like? Her breath tasted like the awful punch he had made. But she had a sweeter scent, so strong he could taste it over the juice and alcohol, like a tingle against his tongue. She was syrup, and she was sour. A heady, vanilla-scented cherry liqueur that had his head spinning. Her lips were soft and plush, impossible for him to kiss lightly. She was so soft, his harder lips sank right into hers, his hand flexing as he tried to anchor himself, slipping away from her cheek and toward the back of her head. His other hand rose, hovering by her neck, the silky strands of her hair brushing against his knuckles, the velvet texture of her skin soft beneath his palm, hitting him with the need to spread both hands out, to touch more, to drag her body into his and see if it had the same give against his hardness as her lips did. And then there was the familiar fury. It took over completely, driven wild by the way his skin grew tight, by the softness of her lips, by her small, shocked gasp, and the desperate, driving need to shove his tongue in and indulge in her properly that knocked him off balance. Isabel immediately gasped, and that somehow deepened the kiss, his lips slipping either side of her lower lip, capturing it, his teeth lightly grazing her flesh. But still,
It was over as quickly as it had happened. He tasted bitter and hot. Burning, actually. And even though it had lasted only a fraction of a second, the kiss had been hard, leaving a strange imprint when he made a low, furious sound and ended it. Moses eased back, and it seemed like he wasn't even there anymore. Those dark gray eyes, a few shades stormier than Theodore's, were bleeding black ink. He tucked his face down before anyone else could see it, turning and striding into the dorm without a word. Theodore broke away, running after him. Reed followed at a slower pace, focused intently on his phone. The rest of the Alphas stayed, pretending nothing weird was happening. Nico hyped up the cheering crowd, and Ashford made out like he was going to draw another name, causing an almost stampede. Isabel slipped away from it all, ignoring Eve calling her name as she made for the stairs leading away from Alpha Lake. She was confused, emotionally wrought, and she just wanted to be alone. She intended to go back to Dorm O, but found her feet carrying her in another direction instead. She tried the door to the chapel, finding it unlocked, and slipped inside. It was quiet and dark, a stark contrast to the party she had left behind, and the chapel was one of the only buildings in the academy entirely free of cameras. She took what felt like her first full breath of the night, padding between the aisles. She found a box of matches on the dais and approached one of the vestibules. She lit the candle and closed her eyes. Mama. She let the word hang there for a moment, as she struggled to form the words that seemed forbidden to her, like speaking them was the gravest betrayal against her remaining parent. What happened to you? The chapel door creaked, jerking her out of her thoughts as she spun toward the sound. Crow was hobbling, blood leaking down the side of his face, one big arm wrapped around his torso, like he needed to hold himself together.
That was silly, he croaked. Coming here, all by yourself.
She didn't even think. She just ran to the only other door, the one heading to the rooftop. He darted after her, suddenly forgetting his injuries. She slammed the door, setting her feet against the second step to brace her back against it. It bowed inward, the force of him hitting the other side making her teeth smack together.
Come out, little Sigma, he growled. I'm hurt. Isn't it your job to make me better?
He collided with the door again, and her right leg crumpled painfully, her knees smacking against the steps as she was shoved forward. He grabbed the back of her dress, dragging her back into the chapel, where he tossed her over the dais like she weighed nothing at all. He bodily twisted her around, looming over her as he batted her arms away.
Look at what you did to me, he spat. Look at me.
He pinched her cheeks, his face hovering over hers. Sato had knocked a few teeth out and cut through his eyebrow. Crow's other hand had captured hers, the bulk of his body pinning her to the ground. She couldn't move, couldn't break free. With a steadying breath, she reached for the only power she had left. She cracked herself open and pulled in his darkness. It was gritty and hard to swallow. There was so much pain, so much untethered anger racing around and building momentum, like a crazy person shouting at a wall. But there was more, too. There was something insidious, and it seemed an endless well, something that she could draw on forever. She cut herself off with a pained gasp, watching as his expression smoothed. He smiled,
and all that was left in his eyes was that hint of never-ending evil she had tasted.
"I think it's time you gave me that kiss," he whispered, shifting his body to press more solidly into hers.
His grip on her wrists had loosened just enough for her arm to fling out, her fingers grappling with something hard. She gripped it, swinging it toward Crow's head. He seemed surprised when she made contact with a sickening crack, his mouth opening and spraying blood across her face. His body went limp, his eyes rolling back, and she shoved him off, scrambling to her feet, glancing down at the candlestick in her hand. It didn't even have any blood on it, and it wasn't damaged at all. Those details seemed safe to grasp as she tried to talk herself around to assessing the entire situation.
Crow was unconscious. She knelt beside him, her hand trembling as she tried to hold a finger under his nose.
"Please be breathing." She couldn't feel anything.
"Fuck!"
She stood up, tears tracking down her face.
"Fuck!"
She fell back, crawling up against the wall, a silken sash brushing her shoulder from where it had been hung up on the wall behind her. She pulled out her phone, sobs beginning to break through her body with the violence of a hammer hitting her ribs. She thought about who to contact. Her father? The police? The dorm supervisor? Eve? Theodore? She clicked on the last message she had received. Ashford.
"I told you I would give you a straight answer."
It took her 3 attempts to reply, her fingers slipping over the screen.
"Isabel, I need an answer."
She waited, her eyes fixed with eagle-eyed intensity on Crow, like he might suddenly reanimate himself and come after her again.
"Ashford."
"What's the question?"
"Isabel, what's Sato's phone number?"
The reply took a little too long, and the darkness she had taken from Crow was beginning to make her dizzy.
"Isabel, you promised me a straight answer."
A few seconds later, he sent the number through, following it up with another message that she didn't read, instead clicking on the new number. She raised her shaking hand to her ear, trying to calm her sobs.
"Yes?"
Sato's rough voice asked, the sounds of the party faint in the distance.
"If you want me to keep your secret, you have to help me,"
she managed to get out. She tried to sound assertive, like she held all the cards, but she knew she sounded wounded and terrified instead.
"Share your location."
He hung up. She stared at her phone through a fresh wave of tears. She was beginning to question the sanity of her choice, but she still shared her location with him. And then she darted forward and picked up the candlestick again, holding it out in front of her with both hands, her eyes switching from the door to Crow. Sato pushed through the door 10 minutes later, wrapped in his leather jacket and a dark expression. He took in Crow with a cursory, uncaring sweep of his black eyes before focusing on her, or on the candlestick in her hands.
"Sigma does it in the chapel with the candlestick,"
he muttered, shaking his head.
This isn't funny."
She gripped her weapon harder, curling a little more into herself.
"Do you see me laughing?"
he asked sharply before kneeling right in front of her. He knocked the candlestick out of his way, but she didn't release it as he leaned over her to grip her chin. He glanced between her eyes, his nostrils flaring.
"He didn't make it far,"
he surmised, inching back to include the rest of her in his assessment. The strap of her dress was torn, hanging off, and there was blood smeared along the front of it, but it wasn't hers. He picked up her wrists, frowning at the bruises beginning to form. touched just below the scrapes on her knees, and then he gently took the candlestick from her, setting it aside.
Cleanup isn't usually my forte.
He left her curled there, walking back to Crow, who he towed with his boot, shoving the bigger boy onto his back.
I might have to call Gabriel in.
No need,
a voice announced from the doorway. Spade stepped through, carefully closing and locking the door behind him.
Kian said the Sigma asked for your phone number.
So naturally a murder has occurred?
Sato rolled his eyes.
Not even you're that smart.
Aren't I, though?
Spade asked glibly. Isabel ignored them, her eyes on Crow again.
Murder? She whispered.
Spade knelt by Crow, a finger pushed into his meaty neck. He seemed to be counting.
Pulse is there, but it's sluggish.
He then began touching Crow all over, checking his ribs, his head, his legs, his chest. When he drew back, he was looking from her to Sato.
You did all this?
He asked her, trying to hide his skepticism. She hesitated before nodding. He frowned, glaring over at Sato, who just shrugged.
She's clearly stronger than she looks. Strong enough to break several ribs and almost choke him out?
Spade shot back, annoyed.
Can she even reach his neck?
I stood on here. She pointed to the dais. She sounded ridiculous.
Smart thinking,
Sato commented. Spade grunted, sitting back.
We can either call Kaelin or we can sneak him into the medical building. It's close enough.
He was looking at her.
Professor West,
he specified, just in case she didn't know who Kaelin was.
You don't want to know what happened?
She asked faintly.
Sure.
He stood, pulling a small pack of sanitary wipes from his pocket. He cleaned his fingers methodically, waiting for her answer. Sato was looking at her with arched, dark brows. His hair was a rich, deep oak color, streaked through with hints of mahogany and darker ink. And just like Professor Easton and Moses, he sported a few scars, though not quite as many as Easton. They mostly littered his arms and hands, with only a few ticking over his face. He had deep-set features, shadows beneath his eyes, and a cutting jawline that made his firm mouth appear even harsher.
He tripped,
she found herself saying. Sato's lips twitched.
That's quite a fall.
Spade was utterly toneless.
And you?
He looked up, setting focused, russet eyes on her.
Did you trip too?
No, I'm fine.
She tried to jump to her feet as though to demonstrate such, but her leg buckled and she pitched straight down again. Sato jerked forward, catching her at the last second, his fist twisting in her dress. He slipped an arm around her waist and then picked her up, sitting her on the podium in the middle of the dais.
Where does it hurt?
He asked, as Spade stepped up beside him.
Ankle?
Spade's cool touch slid around the body part in question, both of them completely ignoring Crow. She winced, nodding her head. He gently slipped off her sandal, setting it on the podium beside her. He lifted her leg, propping it on one of his arms as he traced his fingers up her calf, squeezing gently.
Any pain?
She shook her head as he slid his touch back down, gently clasping her foot, his touch warming up a little against her skin. He slowly turned her foot to one side.
Now?
She shook her head again, and he delicately turned her foot the other way, immediately stopping as she winced and tried to jerk her leg back.
You're swelling up a little.
He released her leg.
But it's just a sprained ankle.
He flicked a look to the side.
Oscar.
He drew in a sharp breath, hesitating. Can you help her back to her dorm?
Sato returned his look flatly.
I believe I can manage it. Wait.
Spade held out his hand to her.
Give me your phone.
Sato rolled his eyes, walking away. She eyed the tension in both boys before handing her phone over quietly. Why are you helping me? She asked quietly.
Because Oscar is here,
he responded automatically.
And he's one of us. The real question is, why is he helping you?
She nibbled on her lip. Out of the goodness of his heart? Sato laughed darkly. Spade frowned, handing her phone back.
Text me when you get home. I'll be checking in until Oscar returns to Dorme. Make sure you respond.
She didn't think she could feel any worse, but a fresh skitter of fear traveled over her already shaking limbs. Okay, she whispered faintly. Sato materialized in front of her in seconds, his arms slipping around her waist. He helped her off the podium and then drew one of her arms around his shoulder, flicking his hair out of his eyes. He smelled like sweet, poisonous nectar, and she thought the scent suited him. His eyes were a snare, his movements like a striking snake, his words dripping with poison.
Don't take too long,
Spade warned, his rust-colored stare tracking them all the way to the door. She was suddenly, unbearably grateful to him. Sato, however, pretended not to hear him. As soon as the door closed behind them, he bent and knocked her knees out from under her, lifting her against his chest.
Quicker this way,
he grunted, stepping toward the path that would take them the long way around the lake. She understood why when he left the path to go around the back of dorms B and D, where there weren't any cameras. He didn't speak until they spilled from the edge of dorm D, and he sat her on one of the fences inside Jasmine Field. They could hear students traveling back toward dorm O from the party along the main path up ahead, and he apparently wanted to wait them out.
If I have to get a fake girlfriend because of this, I'm going to...
His whispered words trailed off against her collarbone, his hands cinching in her waist as he surveyed what he could see of the path over her shoulder, peering through the trees. Going to what? She asked, also whispering. They were tucked beneath one of the weeping willows, where students infamously squirreled away to avoid the cameras. He drew back, his eyes dark as the night around them.
Use your imagination, he suggested.
I'd rather not. His lips twitched.
I'm happy alone, he told her. If you ruin that happiness, I'll fucking ruin yours.
Noted! She sucked in a breath as he hauled her back into his arms without any warning. Or you could just not care. Have you tried that? His exhale was a groan.
Sweet Sigma, you really do overestimate me.
You must care about something, or you wouldn't be so desperate to keep what happened at the party a secret. He scoffed, just about to step out from Jasmine Field when another group of students approached. He ducked back beneath another willow, setting her on the edge of the fence again.
Are you really so clueless?
His tone was flat. She bristled, shoving against his chest. Just let me down. I'll crawl if I have to. He grinned, and it was the first time she remembered seeing him smile properly. His canines were a little pointed, the smile transforming his entire face. It made him seem almost boyish, until it melted away, replaced by his usual terrifying blank mask.
What would Theo do if he found out some beta behemoth had dragged you, drugged, behind dorm A and was trying to shove his hands up your dress?
He asked pointedly. She shifted uncomfortably, seeing the answer more than thinking it.
his eyes would bleed black. He would be in danger. She hadn't managed to find a single mention of ferality in all the library books she had combed through, but she had felt Theodore's emotion in their first year. She knew the taste of it, the violence, the endless darkness and despair. He would be upset, she admitted. He feels responsible for me because I helped him out once. Sato gave her an exasperated look.
That's a convenient way of putting it.
He might surprise you, you know. He might have more control over it than you realize. Sato frowned at her, like he pitied her.
Theo went after Moses tonight. Take a good look at them both tomorrow and tell me if you think this is something we can play around with. If they're both still walking, that is.
Moses went fit. She began to question, but he loomed so close all of a sudden that the words died off. He was right in her face, his hand cupping her jaw, his lips an inch from hers. She could feel his breath and see nothing past the darkness in his eyes. They swallowed her right up, dangling her over a precipice.
Never say it,
he warned in a whisper.
I don't care who can or can't hear you. Never say it.
Suddenly, she didn't know who she was looking at. The shadows drowned out the rich tones of his hair and deepened the sunken set of his eyes, making the dark circles beneath seem heavier. He had seemed almost handsome back in the chapel, with his mahogany locks and hard, smirking mouth. But now he looked haunted. A vengeful thing from a world separate to hers, a world where alphas prowled through the rest of them, forcing them to cower and bow. For the first time, he really, truly scared her. And he noticed. His hand on her jaw hadn't been rough, but he dropped it like he had hurt her somehow, his mouth twitching down at the edges.
Let's go,
he said, though he didn't try to pick her up again. He just stood half a foot away from her, watching her with those blank, burning eyes.
It's not far from here, she croaked out. I can manage it.
He nodded, still unmoving, waiting. She shifted off the edge of the fence, attempting to put a bit of weight on her foot. When it didn't immediately collapse beneath her, she stood, looking up at him. He still hadn't moved, and they were so close now, close enough for another skitter of fear to make its way through her. He sniffed, like he could smell it. And she couldn't tell if he liked that she was afraid of him or not. He was so still, so emotionless. I'm sorry I sort of blackmailed you. She crossed her arms over her chest, fighting off a shiver and skirting her eyes to the side.
Don't take it back now.
His voice was a low, deep rumble.
I like it when people owe me favors.
Okay. She sucked in a quick breath, chancing a quick look up. But I'm not going to fake girlfriend any of your friends. He swept his eyes over her.
That would be a favor for you, little rabbit.
She grimaced, turning away from him and hobbling to the edge of the cover provided by the tree above them. She glanced over her shoulder, seeing that he still hadn't moved. He had saved her. Twice, maybe three times. Thank you, she forced out, wondering why it was so hard to be grateful to him. I owe you.
And I'll collect,
he promised darkly.
And that was why.
Chapter 11, Dangerous Things. Her dance session the next day was a painful one. She had gone to the medical center to have her ankle wrapped, but it still twinged and twitched with little bolts of pain throughout the 2 hours of practice time she had booked. She was sweating more than usual when she finished, so she dragged herself out to the pool and stripped off her sweats, since she was wearing a leotard beneath anyway. She dove into the cold water, immediately soothed as she slowly swam a few languid laps before propping herself on the side and reaching for her phone. There were messages that she hadn't read, as well as an inbox full of emails. Some were from the tutors her father had hired over the years, probably offering veiled advice in the hopes that she name-dropped them on television, now that they thought she might have a chance at getting famous. If they could make a Sigma famous, they could make anyone famous. It was enough to have her